you mentioned 240 inches of precipitation, Mount Olympus, and almost that on the Bailey Range. And yet here on the other side, 18 in Squim, something like that?
Yeah, 14.
14?
At its lowest point. Yeah, Squim Prairie. Phenomenal fall off of precipitation. One of the steepest precipitation gradients in the world. So that yields this incredible mix of diverse habitats, forest habitats to, you know, traditional prairie habitats in Dungeness Squim Prairie, where there was a prickly pear cactus, where there are oak savannas, where there was, open grassy ground. 36 miles away, 40 miles away, a temperate rainforest. And to be able to, visit both of those environments in a day is the equivalent of traveling 1,000 miles, so we have here in the rain shadow habitats and forest communities that are reminiscent of the Rockies. And then out on the coast, you feel like you're in spruce forest that could be up in southeast Alaska.
Yeah. The Gary Oaks there in Squim, there's mm-hmm. one exit where you get off.
Yeah, Squim Avenue.
Squim Avenue, and you see them right there. That's an example of that.
Yeah, that's an example of what it all looked like at one time.
What it all looked like?
Well, what the Squim Prairie.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
before Squim, we can call that.
Yeah, well, we mentioned the word suburb before, and that might be a word to describe that. Page 72, I just have to say it, for the record, you love marmots. You love them. You could tell by the
really, really.
You could tell.
Yeah.
I had that second paragraph. Just that. Well, maybe that's enough. That last paragraph on 72, which ends very early on page 73. I don't know. Does that sound right to you?
More than any other alpine male?
Yeah.
Sure. And this follows a discussion of how the marmots are the only actual endemic species of mammal here on the Olympic Peninsula, because mammals can travel around. They got around even somewhat during the ice ages. But the alpine habitats of the marmot isolated that animal long enough that it became a full species, became its own species. The other four or five endemic mammals on the peninsula are subspecies. So more than any other alpine mammal, the Olympic marmot embodies the coevolution of a native species with its environment. In the geologic and ice age isolation of the Olympic Mountains, the Olympic marmot evolved into a separate species with distinctive behavior and an ecology shaped by the nuances and seasonal variations of its subalpine environment. Similarly, the presence of marmots, burrowing and selectively feeding, has influenced what kinds of plants grow in the meadows where they live. Areas grazed by marmots are known to support more species than ungrazed areas. These relationships, honed and deepened over millennia of adaptation and change, give us a glimpse of the wisdom and magic that lie at the heart of a wilderness ecosystem. Like the elk herds in their rainforest valleys, marmots are an inseparable part of their alpine world. By observing them, a trace of the elegant stitchwork that underlies the beauty of these mountains comes to life.
We saw them on our hike earlier this year. They were wrestling with each other.
They do that. Yeah, they love to. Some think the Olympic marmots wrestle more than any other marmots in the world. David Brash, a researcher for UW, made that observation.
Wrestling marmots. Fantastic. On pages 55 and 56, there's a segment on the effects of global warming. You might read that, or you might just summarize and on that particular page. And then there's another take on climate change as it's affecting the Olympics. So your choice to summarize or to actually read that part.
Yeah, I think that the threat of climate change to the Earth's ecosystems is in crisis mode. It's incredibly profound. Here on the Olympic Peninsula, there has been a history of rapid climatic change. We went from, Dungeness Prairie, 4,000 feet of ice to near desert-like conditions within a 10,000-15,000 year period. But the threat that climate change poses to the Olympics, even with its diversity of ecosystems, is incredibly worrisome. This part of the world, as everyone knows, our reservoirs are not big, huge lakes in the desert. They're the snowpacks on our mountains. And as temperatures rise, the snowpacks diminish. And snow-fed rivers in the Olympic Peninsula, such as the rivers here in the rain shadow, are at incredible threat. We're already experiencing near drought conditions in late summer, the precise late summer and fall, the precise time that salmon enter these rivers to spawn and reproduce. That's a big worry and a very big change that's threatens for us here. There's also most probably, and we're already experiencing it, larger and more intense wildfires, forest fires. Ocean acidification is taking a toll already in the intertidal communities, and shellfish growers are extremely concerned about that. Even though the peninsula has been through such profound climate change and was in fact the axis of that kind of change in the past, we've never experienced anything coming on as hard and as fast as these changes that are about to hit us, or hitting us already.
Yeah. You go into great detail of the effects of El Nino years and the toll that they're taking on sea life in the ocean part of the park. You know, when we think of the park, we think of the mountains, but there's a huge sea component that you helped preserve and which you write about lovingly and with great detail.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Page 171 and 172, Sunflower Stars. That'd be a great thing to read as well. I had never heard of them before. And here you are in the spirit of a poet of the open form North American poets like Allen Ginsberg, who wrote Sunflower Sutras. You have your own version, Sunflower Stars.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah. So this is a description of the intertidal zone and the lower ends of the intertidal zone along the Pacific coast of the peninsula. On the lowest of tides, kelp fronds drift on slack offshore waters, and creatures more common to the subtidal area sometimes make themselves known. On other explorations at very low tides, I've been lucky enough to spot bright orange sunflower stars. Up to 3 feet in size and with as many as 24 rays, sunflower stars are the largest and fleetest of foot among the sea stars, and they inspire in their prey dramatic acts of escape. Scallops will clap their valves together frantically to swim away. Large sea cucumbers have been known to gallop, and the common cockle will kick its foot and rapid retreat across the substrate. Bringing these things to life, you know, this is stuff most people don't get to see that far out.
You love that.
I love it. I do.